Saturday Night Theatre.
Don't send me old mother to prison. Don't send the old lady to jail. She's all I've got, and I like her a lot. Please listen to my sorry tale.
That's it. You got it. Keep it up at the end, okay?
Yes, George.
Right. Now try it once more then, before I see you over the road. All together. One, two.
Don't send me old mother to prison.
That's the style.
Don't send me old lady to jail.
Lovely.
She's
Patrick Troughton as George and Mark Straker as Barry in I'd Give My Right Arm to Be Ambidextrous by Michael Bartlett.
Don't send me old mother to prison. Just think of the dangers that lurk. She may enjoy it in prison, but I'd have to go out to work.
Lovely. Right then, time for school. Now, follow me.
Everything stopped for George. Everything. Not like me. Everything rolled right over me in those days. People, events, ideas, everything. I couldn't stop an old lady on a moped with a 20mm cannon. But George, oh, he was different. I'm different too, now.
One thing you've always got to remember, son. There's always a way of doing something, even if it don't look right to start with. Imagination, that's what you need. Go anywhere, do anything with a bit of imagination you can.
And he certainly had plenty of imagination. Looking back now, it's hard to remember my life before George came into it. But I can understand why the school didn't like him, or at least why Miss Wilkins, the headmistress, didn't.
That man is an influence on the children. The wrong kind of influence. He should stick to his own job and leave the positive child communication work to those of us who are trained.
But although that may have been authority's view of George, the kids loved him.
All right. There's plenty of time for all of you. Now, let's have your hand, young Mark, and over the road we go.
It wasn't just the kids who took to George. He was on friendly terms with most of their mums as well. And he was a great influence on my life at a moment when a great influence was just what I needed. I was working for the Monksdean Mutual Insurance Company at the time, airing my two A-levels round the City of London and feeling very proud of myself. But even so, I was aware that my talents were not being properly appreciated. Of course, at this stage, I did not have the benefit of George's views on such things as women,
unnecessary luxuries,
talent,
you can do anything with a bit of imagination,
or career prospects.
A man who is honest and outspoken and not afraid to act need never fear no one.
The morning I first met him was not a good one. It began in the usual way. Failed alarm clock, no matching socks, and me mum letting the coffee boil over. But the prospect ahead at the office was also pretty gloomy, due to the small matter of the account books, which stubbornly refused to balance. I was feeling dead miserable. And then my shoelace broke, and I was going to be late for my train. So it was hardly surprising that as I began to cross the main road, there was a...
Got you! Now, you just wait a moment.
Theo, what are you doing?
Stand there. Don't move. Back in the tick.
That was the thing about George. When he said do something, it never occurred to you not to do it.
Now come along, you lot. That song was lovely. Now it's time for school.
George, look, my hamster's a lot better. See, I'm taking him to school for my project.
Oh, yeah, he does look a bit brighter, don't he? Well, he does if you don't shake him like that.
Oh, sorry.
Look, you give him to the gentlemen while I sort out this traffic, or that Miss Wilkins will get her knickers in a twist again.
And that was my first experience of seeing how everything stopped for George. I really believe he could have stopped the whole of the 4th Panzer Division with one wave of his lollipop stick. But we were a bit short of panzers round Buckley Park, so George had to put up with cars, lorries and buses like all the other lollipop men.
All right, come along then.
And over the road we all trotted, seven little children and me, holding a rather battered and sleepy hamster in a cage.
Right, off you go then. Have a good day.
Bye, George.
Let's sort it out. Now, what about you?
I was trying to cross the road.
You was trying to collect a one-way ticket to paradise, stepping out like that?
But my train, I'm going to miss it.
Catch the next one.
Well, Mr. Sanders wouldn't like that.
Prefer to see you spattered all over the council's well-maintained tarmac, would he? Frightening all the kiddies on their way to school? Causing the coroner to work overtime?
Well, I don't think Mr. Sanders ever thought of it quite like that.
Then he should, son, he should. Have a bit of thought for others.
But I don't want to be
still, like... you're safely over this time. So everything will be rubbity-dubbity, won't it?
Will it?
Of course it will. You just tell that to you, Mr. Sanders.
Good afternoon, Mr. Furman. You are, of course, aware that it is nearly 10:20?
Yes, Mr. Sanders. But everything's rumpity-dumpity, sir.
It is... what?
The council's tarmac remains undamaged. The coroner will be home in time for tea. And I caught the next one.
So... Mary, I doubt that you ever caught anything in your whole life. Now, what about those monthly accounts?
Oh, nearly done, sir. They might come out right this time.
Your optimism would sometimes seem to be your only redeeming feature.
Yes, sir. Rumpity-dumpity, sir.
We have always found English a perfectly satisfactory implement in this office, Barry. I see no reason for a change.
No, son. I mean, sir.
Try and keep the accounts a little ahead of inflation, Barry. Let me know how far you've got by lunchtime.
From which you will gather that the genius that lay buried within me had not yet been recognised. Even George stopped short of that, but he did keep a fatherly eye on me.
That's right, son. You pop across smartish while I'm ferrying these nippers over. No sense in courting disaster, is there? Have a smarty.
In fact, at that time, it wasn't disaster I was courting, so much as the dark-haired girl in the office over the road. Well, when I say courting, I suppose that's something of an exaggeration, as we hadn't actually met. In fact, I'd never taken a girl out in my life. Not because I didn't want to. I just sort of, well, dried up when I tried to speak to them.
Yes, love?
A bottle of,
Hey, Mary, part of special down here.
Coming up, love.
It wasn't just girls who scared me, though they were the worst. It was people in general. It was in an attempt to do something about this problem that my relationship with George got swept on one stage further.
Yes, love.
I'll have...
Gin tea down here, Mary.
Right.
Oh. I'd taken my courage in both hands and popped into the local pub on my way home. But, as usual, things were not working out like they do on the films. I was just contemplating what would happen if I smashed my fist down on the bar and yelled, "Hey, bartender, give me a whiskey," when I was hit in the back by the Eiffel Tower.
Hello, son, you want a drink?
Oof! Well, it felt like the Eiffel Tower. Oh, Tuller.
Right then. Mary, two pints down here, love.
Coming up, George.
I haven't seen you here before, have I?
No, just dropped in, way home from work.
Jolly good, nice to see you. No more kamikaze crossings lately.
What? Oh, no, not many. That is...
Two pints, George. How's the kids, then?
Charla, oh, not so dusty. I taught some of them a new song the other day. Got it off Pat there.
Oh, they'll have that headmistress after you again. Corrupting the young and all that.
Wish they do, though, is it? Anyway, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine. This is Mary, and this is some...
Barry Furman. Pleased to meet you.
Oh, that's nice, then, isn't it? Cute little fella, isn't he?
Things were moving a bit fast for me. A moment ago, I was all alone and dead scared. Now I had a pint of bitter in one hand and was chatting up the barmaid. But the pint was a problem. Up to now, I'd only ever had a bottle of cider, but George's pint was already gone. I couldn't risk my newfound reputation, so there's only one thing for it.
Same again, please.
Why, Christmas, son, you was thirsty, weren't you?
Oh, my round.
I don't remember much about the next hour or two. I do remember being very late for my tea, but the taste of confidence was more intoxicating than the beer, and I nipped into the pub again the next night, straight into the mother and father of all rows.
For the last time, you silly old codger, you've got to get a move on with them kids. You're meant to be a school patrol, not a travelling theatre. That's right. Stick me in a box. Thief, rapist, murderer, arsonist, lollipop man. You got them all tabulated, haven't you? See a problem, give it a name, hand out the blame, and forget all about it. No wonder the country's in the state it's in with people like you running it.
A bit more of George's hyperbole there, as it turned out. Ernie, as I later learned, was only a local police constable.
I'm not calling you a rapist, George. I just want you to let a bit of traffic through occasionally in the morning.
No, not a rapist, no. But you want me to be a murderer, don't you? Kids aren't safe on that road. It's a death trap. It's only me and me lollipop between them and eternal damnation.
So all I want is a bit of share and share alike. Let a few kids across, let a few cars through. That's not too much to ask now, is it?
Letting one through is just the thin end of the wedge.
Oh, it's all right for you. It's not you that has to march out into the road with nothing but a pole for company.
Look, George, I don't mind you holding animal clinics on the curb. I don't mind you holding impromptu singing lessons. I don't even mind you regaling drivers with your views on their ancestry. But I do mind when the tailback not only reaches the Kingston bypass, but also manages to block three of the main exits from London to the southwest.
I think you're exaggerating, Ernie.
Just, but only just. Keep them cars moving, or we may have to move you instead. And that's a message from the inspector.
I got to know Ernie quite well later on. He and George argued furiously, but they were very fond of one another, really. Known each other a long time.
He shared a desk at school with my old man. I've known him since I was knee-high to a sparrow. Always had his own way of looking at things as George.
I'd already begun to realise that, but I still didn't realise just how hard he'd been hit over the years by what he called imagination and the world called failures.
I never wronged an onion. I hope I never shall. I never wronged an onion. I treat it as a pal. Tell me, tell me, tell me why. I never wronged an onion. Why should it make me cry?
Lives for those kids, does George? Bit too much sometimes, maybe. Did I ever tell you about the time he was a deck chair attendant?
No.
I could have told him they wouldn't float, not even lashed together.
What happened?
Party of kids, see, wanted to go mackerel fishing. George offered to help, in his own way, of course. Oh, they got them out all right. The RAF helicopter was there in 10 minutes, and luckily most of them could swim.
Oh, why didn't he hire a boat?
Exactly the point of my argument, Barry. You and I think in terms of organised boat trips. George thinks of rafts made out of deck chairs.
The trouble with imagination, like enthusiasm, is that it's all very well in its place, but it doesn't fit into the real world.
And then there was that time at Wynhurst Park Zoo. Now, you see, Barry, if you or I thought that lions born in captivity were really as friendly as domestic cats, we'd like as not leave that thought at the theory stage. Not George, though. He goes and lets them out.
Wow!
Well, might you say wow? It was three emus, a zebra, and a week's worth of stunning pellets before they got that little lot sorted. And it was the end of George's career as a zookeeper as well.
As I got to know George better, I came to realise that being sacked was his most frequent experience. But at the time, it just seemed sad. Inevitable, I suppose, but sad.
I'll tell you this for nothing, Barry. I worry about George. That's why I got in this job as lollipop man. Suit him down to the ground, I thought. Lots of leisure, lots of kids. Just the ticket. But with him, nothing's ever straightforward.
Of course, most of this I only learned much later. That first time I met Ernie in the pub, he only nodded briefly to me. He was too intent on his row with George. After he'd gone, I asked George about it.
Bureaucratic nonsense, son, that's what that was. The machine don't like people who think for themselves, you know. Yeah, what are you drinking?
Oh, no, this one's on me. Two pints. Oh, mister.
Don't be so tentative, son. Don't think about it, it'll all happen. 2 pints, Mary Dove.
Coming up, George.
Don't be tentative. Right, got that. Already, I'd fallen into the habit of mentally taking notes while George was talking.
Here you are, George. 2 pints. £1.60, please, love.
Oh, this is my round. Here you are.
Ta-ta, love. Nice to see you again. A few more pints of that inside you, and you'll be able to see over the counter without your high heels on, won't you?
Can couple of days before, a remark like that would have finished me for weeks. But already, George's influence was beginning to work.
Well, better line up a couple more right away before you disappear again.
Oh, cheeky. You'll have to keep your friend in check, George. If he does grow any bigger, I'm going to need protection.
Yeah.
Her smile, her cleavage, and her false eyelashes made a profound impression on me. I felt like there wasn't much left to conquer. The world's problems were there for my solving. So, I turned to the one nearest to hand. What was that row all about then, George? You in trouble or what?
Men of vision have always been reviled, my son. You get used to it in my line of work.
Your line of work? But you're a lollipop man. Which only goes to show that my education had only just begun. My newfound self-confidence took a fair bashing as I discovered that I put my foot in it right up to my neck.
I am part of the educational system, son. A small cog in a large wheel, possibly, but a vital cog nevertheless.
Oh, well, yes, of course. I didn't mean anything.
Those of us who work with the young have responsibilities. I provide a service to those children who pass through my hands.
Well, yes, you see them across the road.
No, apart from seeing them across the road, I plant the gift of imagination in their minds. I nurture their individuality.
Oh.
Watch it, love. Get George started on that one, you'll be here all night.
I thought of me mum, no doubt already unfreezing tonight's supper, but I couldn't leave. Not then. Not with George sitting there, draining his first pint. A hint of unrevealed secrets hanging around his moustache in a line of froth.
I think of those kids like they was me own, you see. Life is for living, son. Most people forget that. The kids know it, though, deep down. And that's where I step in. I try and help them realise it. Most of us are too scared to have ideas of our own in case somebody disagrees with us. So we collect ideas from other people. But my children aren't scared.
And just for a moment, sitting there in the bar of the Fox and Apricot, I wasn't scared either. I thought of the office where the account books were still mysteriously misbehaving. I thought of my glorious future, which seemed so long in coming. I thought of all the girls I'd never dared speak to. These things could be overcome. I was an individual. I had imagination.
No system's going to beat my children. And no headmistress is going to stop me either. My children think for themselves.
I went to call on my friend dear Miss Brown. She was having a bath and she could not come down. I said, "Sip on something and please come down quick." So she slipped on the soap and was down in a tick.
Hardly an old English folk song, is it, Mr...
George.
Mr George.
No, just George.
Yes. Now then, these songs...
Oh, don't worry, it's no trouble. I enjoy it, so do the kids.
What the children like and dislike is hardly the point.
Oh.
We are used to teaching young children songs like Ding Dong Bell, graduating by simple degrees to the Ash Grove and Lasser Richmond Hill... Encouraging people to fall downstairs without any clothes on is another matter.
Well, it gives them a bit of a change, right?
Yes, perhaps. However, I feel that the curriculum is my concern. Yours is merely to ensure that they arrive here in one piece.
Odd enough job on that road out there. Dead tricky, them lorries, you know. So if you aren't tricky, you're dead. That's all there is to it.
Yes. Yes, quite. But as I say, I did not ask you to come here to see me to discuss our respective roles.
Oh, beg pardon, what was it then?
Punctuality.
Oh, sorry, was I late? Only there was this rabbit, you see.
Rabbit? And,
well, it belonged to one of the kids. It was off his grub.
I don't think I'm being unduly slow on the uptake, but what have a rabbit's dietary habits got to do with seeing children across the road?
Well, they bring them to me, you see. I know a bit about animals, I always have done. I give them a bit of help when they need it.
Oh, really?
It's a quiet experience. I mean, you can tell a lot about a rabbit from the consistency of its pellets, you know.
No, I didn't.
And you know that stuff they put in dog's meat? Well, I can tell you that that's one of the reasons that the pavements are such a horrible...
Mr. George, I don't want to discuss the contents of animal stomachs. In fact, I don't want to discuss animals at all, but it is an example of what I've been saying.
Sorry,
Punctuality. Not yours, the children's. They stop and talk to you. And what is the result?
Well, they learn a new song. Their animals get better.
They are late for school. And it must stop.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Those of us in education do need a certain sense of responsibility, don't we?
I beg your pardon?
Responsibility.
Did you say those of us in education?
Yeah.
And since when have you been on the teaching staff here, may I ask?
Well, no, true, not on the staff exactly, I grant you, but, well, I mean, we're all a team, aren't we?
No, most decidedly we are not all a team. I am the headmistress, my staff are all qualified teachers, and you are the lollipop man, and have nothing whatsoever to do with this establishment or the children's education. Is that clearly understood?
Well, yes, but...
And furthermore... I expect all my pupils to be in school on time each morning, lorries and rabbits notwithstanding. You do your job, Mr. George, and I'll do mine. And the less we see of each other, the better.
So I drew myself up to my full height, and I said, Madam, in spite of your insults and discourteous attitude, I have behaved throughout this interview like a gentleman. And because that is what I am... I will now leave your presence without informing you that I think you're a pretty narrow-minded old cow, which I assure you is my real view.
Go on. You never did.
Oh, more or less. I'll give you the sense rather than a precise wording. I left her in no doubt as to my views.
Phew. I'd never dare do something like that.
I used to be terrified of our headmaster when I was at school.
That's exactly my point. How can you learn anything from someone? What terrifies you?
Oh, I don't know. I did all right, really. I got 2 A-levels, you know.
What do they taste like?
History and... Pardon?
Well, you can't eat them, can you? You can't talk to them. Can't share things with them. Who do you used to drink with before I come along, eh? Your A-levels.
You are joking, aren't you?
It's all part of the con trick, son. Vague promises for the future and sod all for here and now.
Oh, but I needed those A-levels. How else would I have got a job?
Do you like this job?
Well, no.
Why bother, then?
The trouble with obvious questions is that there are seldom obvious answers. Well, everyone does. You have to.
Everyone does not. I don't. And you only have to do things if you think you have to.
Oh, come on, George. There's lots of things you have to do.
Like what?
Well, pay the phone bill.
Don't have a phone.
Pay the rates.
Rent a flat.
Pay the rent.
Live with someone else.
Well, wear clothes when you're out in the street.
Preferable, maybe, but not essential.
I never know when you're joking or not.
Son, you can take it from me that I'm not joking. Stretching a point to prove a point, maybe, but I'm not joking.
Go to school. Everyone has to go to school.
Ain't much good it does 'em. Look at you. You don't know your arse from your elbow, A-levels or not. And how old are you?
20.
20. Wasted childhood, son. That's what you've had.
But how else am I going to get on in the future?
Do you want to get on?
Of course I do. I want promotion. I want to be manager of an office. I want to dictate letters and have a secretary and long lunch hours. Meet important people and join things so I can go out in the evenings and then...
Die of old age at 25. And for what? Look at me, son. Never been ambitious in my life. But see what I've managed to do.
I thought of the floating... or rather the sinking deck chairs, and other tales Ernie had told me. But it didn't seem like the right moment to bring them up.
I'm happy, you see, son. No ambition, so no sense of failure. That's my secret. The less you want, the happier you are. It's simple, isn't it?
No. Philosophy, especially a simplistic philosophy, has no place in this office, Barry. All I want is a complete set of accurate account books.
I think I've had a wasted childhood, sir.
That seems increasingly likely, but we are talking about now. Don't you want to get on? Make something of yourself?
Well, I'm not quite sure, Mr. Sanders. I mean, yes, I do, but today's important too, isn't it?
I've made a lot of allowances for you, Barry. I've given you time to find your feet, settle down, but yes, now sir. I do feel I am entitled to expect that you can sort the books out and still manage to do something else as well.
Look, you can do anything you want, son, but you've got to make your mind up. You just let yourself drift, and people will push you wherever they want you to go.
I'm trying to teach my kids that, see? To be positive.
I gave my girl an apple. She let me hold her hand. I gave my girl an orange. We kissed to beat the band. I gave her a banana. She hugged me very tight. I'm gonna take a watermelon to my girl tonight.
Girls were still my main problem. I hadn't even got to the apple stage with anyone, let alone taken them a watermelon. I still fancied the dark-haired girl in the office opposite, but she finished work half an hour before me, and I didn't know how to get in touch with her. In the end, I took the problem to George.
The difficulty in our path would seem to be one of communication, would you say?
Yes, that's it. I don't know her phone number, see?
Well, you could try Semaphore. Only need a couple of flags. Do you know Semaphore?
No.
You always learn. Very easy. Well, I dare say she don't know either. I don't know what they teach them these days. The educational system has got a lot to answer for, you know.
But on this particular night, I was determined to steer George past his hobby horse. Yes, well, I've tried leaning out of the window and shouting, but it's difficult above the noise of the traffic. And anyway, everyone else can hear me.
True. That's true, yeah. Sweet nothings lose something of their charm when they have to fight it out with a London bus. No, this needs an oblique approach, son.
How do you mean?
Well, when logic lets you down, try imagination. You can't telephone her, right?
Right.
But what is a telephone?
Eh?
What is a telephone?
Well, sort of plastic.
No, I mean, metamorphically speaking. It's a line between you, isn't it? It's a connection made between two individuals who wish to communicate. Therefore, we must find a substitute.
For a moment, I had a vision of me huddled over a Morse key, hidden behind the account books, with a secret transmitter in the waste paper basket. But then, saner counsels prevailed. At least, I think they were saner.
Bow and arrow.
Do what?
Toy shop, bow and arrow. Arrow with sucker on the end. Fired it across the street, hits window, sticks there. She reaches out and pulls it in.
Then what?
She undoes the note, which you have previously affixed to the shaft of the arrow, unrolls it and reads, invitation to the pictures preceded by cup of tea and a bun. Eureka!
I began to see what he meant by imagination. Though my imagination boggled at what Mr. Sanders might say if he found me waltzing round the office with a bow and arrow.
Drawing a bow adventure, are we, Barry? But what about the accounts, boy? What about the accounts?
I'm afraid I found them a very harrowing experience, Mr. Sanders.
The one thing about imagination is that you can always come out tops. Always think of the right thing to say. But you can't give it a quick cuddle in the back of the stalls. So, in spite of certain misgivings, I decided to give George's scheme a try.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained, my son. Skulking behind his account books didn't win the Battle of Waterloo for Napoleon, now, did it?
A trip to the local toy shop, a thoughtful penning of some lyrical prose, a quick twiddle with a bit of string, remembering my left over right, right over left, just as the cubs taught me, and I was ready. I waited until Mr. Sanders went to lunch. Then I opened the window and... twang. Pity the rubber sucker fell off in flight.
Afternoon.
Oh, hello. I'd never really noticed before that commissionaires are such big men.
I presume that as you are holding that lump of stick with string attached, I'm correct in presuming that you may have more than casual knowledge about the demolition of the transparent device, which is normally firmly fixed in the wall of the building opposite?
Do what?
Did you bust the window over the road?
Well, yes, I suppose I did. But it was all in the cause of true love.
Which, as tradition has it, seldom, if ever, runs smooth. Well, you'll be pleased to hear that tradition has not let you down. The house manager wants to see you in his office.
An interesting interview, which certainly added something to my experience of human nature. But at least I had the consolation that even if the hero was wounded, the message to the cavalry had got through. Eagerly, I awaited some sort of response. It came that evening, via an unlikely messenger.
Oi! Barry Hood!
Do what?
Note for you. Young lady left it.
How do you know it's for me?
Well, strange as it may seem, most insurance companies don't have many fellas loosing off at neighbouring windows with bows and arrows. So you just sort of stuck in the mine, see?
Oh, tough.
So it had come. The message smuggled through the lines. The secret rendezvous on the beach at night. The assignation at the masked ball. Eagerly, I tore open the envelope.
Dear Barry, thanks ever so for the note. What an interesting way to send it. Still, I suppose it's cheaper than a stamp.
Cheaper, my foot. They'd already told me what that window's going to cost.
It came as an awful surprise, mind. I'd just started on my pineapple yoghurt when... crash! Very romantic, I must say. Although, I didn't quite understand all of it. What is a white charger?
I suppose I had let myself be carried away a bit.
But it was a nice note, really. I'm only sorry that I can't come to the pictures on Friday because my boyfriend wouldn't like it. He's a sales rep, by the way, doing very well. Still, it was nice to hear from you. Don't stop waving, will you? As it makes our supervisor laugh and cheers the place up a bit. Yours, Suzanne.
Cheers the place up a bit?
Oh, P.S. If you were really a gentleman, you'd offer to buy me another pineapple yoghurt. Mine's got bits of glass in it. But perhaps you can't afford it.
Cheers the place up a bit!
There are worse things to be successful at, son. Anything that brings a little light into someone's day, you know.
Yes, but George, there I am declaring undying love and affection and all...
Self-sufficiency, son. Don't let yourself become dependent on others. That's the way to get hurt.
Well, yes, okay. But I really fancied her.
Plenty more girls about. Find yourself another one.
Oh, easy for you to say, not so easy to do. I never meet any.
By Christmas, son, you do make them hear it, don't you? Let us take the inaccuracies of that statement one by one. First, it is not easy for me to say. What I would like to say is don't touch women with a barge pole. Stand alone. Be pure. Do without.
I began to eye George a little suspiciously. He'd always behaved perfectly well up to now, but I remembered the warnings of my old scoutmaster and surreptitiously moved my stool back a bit.
Well, that's my view, it's not yours. You want, for whatever reason, to come closely acquainted with a young lady. Would I be right in supposing that at this stage of your emotional development any young lady of reasonable appearance would do?
Well, no. I mean, well, yes.
Precisely. Therefore, in spite of my own reservations, and perhaps I could just say I think you're potty, I will help you.
You will? Oh, great.
Now then, the next inaccuracy. Not so easy to do. Well, that's obviously rubbish, as I'll show you in a moment. And for the third statement, I never meet any. Balderdash. You must meet a couple of dozen every day.
Where?
In shops, on trains, walking along, in lifts, anywhere you like.
Yes, but I can't talk to them.
You want to meet girls and go out with girls. Then you'll have to talk to girls. Well, you're going to have some very boring evenings.
You mean, just walk up to them and speak like?
Well, it's still the best way of communicating, son. Beats a bow and arrow.
All right, I'll try it. And I did. Girl on the tube was first. Never discovered her name. We were pressed together between Bank and Moorgate. She was taller than me. My nose was nearly touching her nipple, and I felt that was almost better than being formally introduced. So I thought, well, nothing ventured. So I said, excuse me.
Eh?
Excuse me, fancy coming to the pictures tonight?
To what?
The pictures. Fancy coming to the pictures? I'll buy you a cup of coffee first, if you like.
Shove off, I only go out with grown men.
Oh.
And take your nose off me boobs or I'll call the guard.
Face slap number one, metamorphically, as George would put it, speaking. Still, it hadn't been as difficult as I thought. Clearly a line of action worth following up.
Can't always expect results first time round. It's all good experience, though.
Yes. George, why don't you like women?
Oh, I don't not like them. I just don't need them. That's the difference, son.
Oh, is there, anything you like better?
Yeah, children. They're honest. Say what they mean. And their minds haven't become closed. That's nice. That's good. There's still hope for them, see?
Yes.
Some grown-ups are like that. Some are okay. You're not bad, for instance.
Oh, thanks.
No, but kids is best. That's why I'm a bit worried.
I had noticed that the pint was sinking rather slower than usual, but I hadn't liked to say anything. I thought maybe he'd had another set to with his headmistress.
It's not safe, you know, that road.
No, well, I know that. Nearly came a cropper there myself, if you remember.
Exactly. What chance do kids stand?
Well, the kids are okay, George. They've got you there to look after them.
Only twice a day, son. Only twice a day. And how many roads do you think they have to cross in their lives without the benefit of me and my lollipop?
Well, quite a lot, probably. But they'll have their mum or someone there, won't they?
Maybe, maybe not. Can't tell. It's not safe to leave it a chance. I want them to be prepared.
How?
I want to give them road safety lessons. But make them a bit like a game, see? So it all sinks in. You can't force kids to learn, you know. They'll only do it if they want to.
Yes, but you
know... Only thing is, how to do it. I need them all together, see? Do it in a group. You don't think that headmistress would let me do it in one of the lessons, do you? I'd only need, say, one a week.
George, I wouldn't rely too heavily on that if I were you.
No, I get you. Because of that Barney we had, eh? Think she might take it the wrong way.
I think she might.
Then I'm stuck, aren't I?
Oh, Jemima, look at your Uncle Jim. Diving in the duck pond, learning how to swim. First he does the breaststroke, then he's on his side. Now he's under the water, swimming against the tide.
Over the past few weeks, my friendship with George had become very important to me. In the mornings, I'd cross the road with him and watch him for a few minutes, handling the children, their mothers, the traffic, all with a sense of calm assurance. Never panicked, never rushed. Always plenty of time to stop and look at a new puppy, answer questions about what to give a rabbit with colic, listen to a favourite story or poem, pass a compliment to a young mum. It was a joy to watch him.
Oh, Jemima, look at your Uncle Jim. Scrubbing down the floor with soap and water and vim. First he's on his left knee, then he's on his right. Now he's running the bar of soap and skidding right out of sight.
And yet I still didn't really know him. I only ever made one visit to his home, and that was by accident. I'd become convinced that the reason girls didn't reckon me was because I wasn't trendy enough. So I did something about it.
Why, Christmas, son. What's up with you? Had a tussle with a low-flying helicopter or something?
It's my new hairstyle.
It's new, all right. I don't know about the style. Police get the fella, did they? Take the shears off him?
Oh, give over, George. I spent a lot of money on this. Thought it might impress Caroline. Caroline, receptionist at my dentist's. A couple of dodgy fillings, and I'd actually fixed a date for the pictures on Saturday.
In the Fuzzy Monsters, is she? Secret yen for King Kong.
I think it's very elegant.
You try too hard, son. Women ain't impressed by externals. Just relax. Be yourself. Let it all happen.
But that's just it. It doesn't happen. I'm getting desperate.
Yeah, you look pretty desperate. Okay, try it your way. But when you're fed up with looking like David Crockett's partner, you come back to me and I'll sort it out for you, okay?
Okay, but it'll be a long wait. It wasn't, of course. George was right, as usual. Caroline took one look and remembered a previous engagement. 3 days later, Miranda, public library, reference section, asked if she could have the name of the fertilizer as her dad was having trouble with his lawn. And 2 days after that, Sandra, claims department, third floor, said I reminded her of her grandmother's hearth rug. At that point, I conceded defeat. George was very good about it on the whole. Didn't say I told you so. Just gave me his address and told me to be round there sharp at 9 the following Saturday morning.
Ah, oh, good. Come in, my son. Let's be having you.
Two small rooms in one of those side roads off the high street. Both of them neat as a new pin. Perfectly ordinary in every way, except...
Oh, I see you're admiring my collection. They look good, don't they?
Well, yeah. A long line of peaked caps, all hanging from the picture rail, like a gentleman's cloakroom.
My badges of office, son. Posts I've held.
Gosh, can I have a look?
Well, perhaps a quick glance before we tackle your barnet. Let's start over here.
Bus driver, beach inspector, park keeper, railway porter, meter reader, deck chair attendant. They were all there. There was even a red Father Christmas hood. But the pride of place was given over to...
Zookeeper, son. Happiest days of my life.
I remembered Ernie's story about the lions and wondered if I should change the subject.
I might have been head keeper now, except for a slight error of judgment.
Oh.
It's been my experience, son, that people are not always as considerate as you might hope they'll be. And the same applies to lions. It's worth remembering that.
Oh, yes, right.
Still, I have my memories. They can't sack those.
And that's your lollipop hat. Are you going to move on from that?
Who can tell? But not yet, that's for sure. I've got to get those road safety lessons sorted out first. Right then. Let's see if we can return you to the human race, shall we?
He sat me down in a wooden chair and laid an impressive array of scissors and combs out on the table beside me. You'd have thought he was going to take my appendix out, not just give me a haircut.
Did you used to be a barber then, George?
Oh, I was a gentleman's hairdresser, son. And as such, second to none.
Why'd you give that up?
Well, now, what is the prime purpose of a gentleman's hairdresser, would you say?
Well, give the old mop a chop, I suppose.
You would be wrong. The prime purpose of a gentleman's hairdresser is to listen to a variety of opinions from someone who wants to talk without being interrupted to someone whom he may never see again.
Oh.
For 5 years, I chopped and snipped, and I combed and brushed, and listened to God knows how many people go on and on about what they did, what they could do, what they would do, if only.
If only...
If only they had a bit more money. If only they'd been a bit luckier. If only they got married a bit later or a bit earlier. If only they never got married at all. If only they'd married somebody different. If only. If only. If only. It made me sick.
Oh.
It's all blaming somebody else, you see, for something what was all their own fault. A man can achieve anything, son, if he wants to. Be anything, learn anything.
I'd heard it all before, of course, but this time he was getting pretty excited, prancing around, waving his scissors in the air, so I began to feel quite nervous. Then I said it, stupidly, without thinking, the way one does when you don't know what to say next, but feel the need to fill a pause.
Why didn't you achieve anything, George?
Eh?
His prancing stopped in mid-air, or it seemed to. He turned and looked at me. His scissors drooped, and for a moment I felt frightened. But before I could do anything, he ripped the cloth off my shoulders and, grabbing me by the arm, rushed me across the room.
Here. You look at that lot.
I didn't know you were a reader, George.
Veterinary books, they are. All of them. Go on, look at them. Horses' bowels? You want to ask me anything about horses' bowels? Gestation period of gorillas? I know all about that. Dietary habits of panthers, antelopes, bison... Skin diseases of pelicans, pussycats and porcupines, I know them all.
Gosh, George, well, you should have been a vet or something.
Or something. No qualifications, see? No money, no influence, so no college, no training, no fancy letters after me name.
Yes, look, mind the scissors.
But I still fool them. I may not have the fancy letters, but I know it all, see? Know it inside out, I do. And I did it. All by myself, I did it.
I left soon after that. My hair wasn't much better, but it was certainly shorter. I wanted to get away, to try and relate this new George to the one I thought I knew. I couldn't. So that night, in the Fox and Apricot, I sought out Ernie to see if he could fill in some more of the gaps.
So, he showed you his books, did he?
Yes.
Well, I did warn you. He don't think in straight lines, don't George? No, but that don't mean he don't think at all.
He's all right, though, is he? I mean, I got a bit worried there this morning.
Depends what you mean by all right.
Well, he's not going nuts, is he?
George, nuts? Course not. He's just different.
Oh.
Now, look, I don't want no gossip going on about George. He's a good mate of mine in spite of everything.
Oh, I'm not going to gossip about him. He's a good mate of mine, too.
Okay. Well, now.
This is for your ears only, right?
Right.
Well, did you know that George used to be married?
No.
When? Long time back. She left him.
Oh.
Ran off with a mechanic from the bus depot. He gave night school classes in car maintenance. George's old lady decides she wants to improve her mind. Goes to evening classes, and before you can say dirty spark plug, bingo.
Bingo?
Precisely. Anyway, that hit old George pretty hard. But there was worse to come.
Oh.
She had a baby.
George's wife?
Yes. Except she wasn't his wife anymore. They'd got a divorce, and she'd married this other bloke. I'm sort of compressing the time scale, you understand.
Oh, so it wasn't George's baby then?
Of course not, you daft beggar. That's what I'm telling you. George has always wanted children, but they didn't have any. So it hurt him all the more when she did with someone else.
Why didn't George get married again?
Not much of an advert, is it?
Suppose not.
You're not to let on I've told you all this, young Barry. It's only cause of you being a mate of George, and I reckon he's going to need all the mates he's got.
Do you mean that Barney with the headmistress?
That and other things. Rubs a few people up the wrong way, does old George?
Not the kids, though.
No, not the kids.
Bit of a waste, really, isn't it, Ernie?
What is?
Well, George, all them books and that.
Why is it a waste? What do you know about it?
Well, not much use, is it, knowing all about elephants' bowels and that? Don't get many sick elephants round Buckley Park, do we?
And what's that got to do with the price of custard? Don't you make the mistake that everyone else does, Barry. Knowing what colour horse dung ought to be, if you don't want the equine animal to keel over and put all four hooves in the air, might not matter much to you. Or to me, come to that. But it's important to George. And until you can understand that, you won't understand anything.
But I didn't really understand that. In the same way that I didn't really understand how serious George's problems were. I was still at the stage where I thought that you grew out of problems, like you grew out of acne. And anyway, just at this time, I had problems of my own.
Accounts, Barry?
They're all here, Mr. Sanders.
Finished?
Well, almost.
Accurate?
Well, not exactly.
Barry, I think it's time you and I had a serious talk.
Oh, quite. I understand people like to talk to gentlemen's hairdressers, sir.
Judging by the state of your hair, I would say you'd talked to yours too much and distracted him from the task in hand. I wasn't going to mention it, but since you've raised the matter, I consider your current hairstyle to be unsuitable for this business. It is sufficiently different to stop all business at Lloyd's faster than the sound of the routine bell.
Perhaps I could wear a peaked cap, sir.
We appear to be drifting down yet another of your fascinating but irrelevant tangents, Barry. I have an office to run, and you must appreciate that there is a limit to how long I can carry an accounts clerk who cannot do accounts.
Thought I'd leave that insurance company soon, George.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good idea, son. Oh, there's no future in there. Blimey, what happened to your hair?
Oh, I thought I'd do better to have it all off and start again.
Yeah, you've got a nice bit of stubble there, haven't you?
Yes. Only I can't go just yet, of course. I need the money. But I don't think I'm cut out for insurance.
No one's ever cut out for insurance. Some of you do if you can't find anything better.
Yes. And then I'm having a spot of bother with Gwenda. Gwenda. Lovely figure. In the typing pool. 50 words a minute. But some kind of reputation had preceded me.
You've got to be joking. I've heard about you. Shut up anything in skirts, you would. Push off. And buy a wig.
Fancy having a reputation without a track record.
So I was wondering if you'd have a word with her for me, like.
Who? Gwenda?
No. Miss Wilkins. The headmistress.
Why should I want to speak to Miss Wilkins?
Well, I've sorted it out, see. I do it at playtime. In the playground.
Do what? Oh, the road safety lessons.
Yeah, that's it. She'd probably listen to you.
Why?
Well, you know, education and all that. You've got A-levels.
It was the first time anyone had suggested to me that my A-levels might have a practical value. But even then, I wasn't keen. I'm not keen, George. I mean, I don't know her, do I?
Well, that's all to the good.
No, I might put her off. You know, well, no one likes a total stranger bursting into the room saying, "Here, missus, the local lollipop man wants to play around with your kids at playtime." Doesn't sound too good, does it?
Well, no, not when you put it like that, no.
Trouble was, He taught me too well. Using imagination, I came up with half a dozen good reasons why I shouldn't face Miss Wilkins in her den. Never touched on the real one, of course. The fact I was dead scared. And so I failed George when perhaps he needed me most.
Better do it myself, then.
Sure.
I mean, it won't do any harm at playtime, will it? It's the only chance for me to get them all together. And it is for her own safety, after all.
Yeah, of course it is.
It needn't be all at playtime if she thinks that's too much. Just 10 minutes each morning would do. She's bound to say yes to that, isn't she?
No!
But, Mrs...
You have nothing to do with this school, as I've told you before. I will not have you on the premises.
But
we provide all the teaching that is necessary. We are trained. You have no more connection with the school than the dustman or the decorators.
I just want to help the kids with their road safety. That road out there is a killer.
And you are paid to see that it does not succeed. Anyway, they do not need road safety lessons. Every classroom has a green cross code poster in it.
Look, I've tried to cooperate with you.
You've done what? Oh, this is ridiculous. You've repeatedly tried to undermine my authority. You teach the children rude songs and bad manners.
Do I, Ellis-like? I listen to them. Make friends with them, that's all.
It's disgusting.
Well, their mums don't seem to mind. I make friends with them and all.
I think you're just a dirty old man.
What?
You've no right to engage those children in conversation at any time. You are employed to see them safely across the road, and no more.
And you are employed to give them a bit of knowledge, not bully them, and kill off all their sparkle.
How dare you! Get out of my study at once! I will have you out of that job if it's the last thing I do! You are a disgrace to the neighbourhood!
Oh, don't worry, I'm going. I know what gets up your nose, Missus. The kids like me, don't they? And it don't take a lot of imagination to work out what they think of you.
Go on. He never said that, did he?
No imagination she has got.
It won't do, George. You can't go round upsetting everyone like that.
Not everyone, just her. And what about her upsetting me?
We've had an official complaint. She's asked us to remove you.
Well, you're not going to, are you?
Of course not. None of her business, really. But don't make it hard on yourself, George. There are them what's only looking for an excuse.
You're an inspector, eh?
Traffic wardens, actually. They say it's become impossible to sort out parked cars from those waiting in the queue.
Tin pot dictators. It's that peak cap, you know. Go par mad when they put on one of them.
I think that was the first warning sign, really. But it didn't seem quite the moment to say, "Pardon me, George, I think your paranoia's showing." So I said nothing.
There's a limit, George, and you're very near it. We employ you, of course, not her. But follow the lines of power back enough and high enough, and they're bound to meet somewhere. You give her enough reason, and she might just go high enough. Okay?
The row with Miss Wilkins obviously affected George deeply. For several days after, the morning crossings were quiet and well ordered. No songs, no advice about pets. Nothing. The kids didn't like it. You could tell. There was quite an air of strain at the curbside. Even the bus drivers were puzzled, especially when George let two of them through in succession without banging them on the side with his lollipop stick. I was a bit preoccupied myself at the time. Sylvia, blue-eyed waitress at the Cardoma near the office. So I hadn't seen George for some days. Then one morning, as I turned into the main road, I heard...
One day I took my mother-in-law a-swimming in the ocean. The way she giggled and splashed about, she caused a great commotion. I loved her heart, bee-bee-bee-bee, oh how I loved and gloated, for one of her legs was made of gold. And upside down she floated.
And I knew George had found some way of fighting back.
Lovely! Now then, there's a red fruit drop for the first one who can spell commotion when I see you tomorrow, right? And there's another one for the first one to give me the names of five oceans, right? Right then, off you go. Time for school. Oh, Catherine, love, just hang on a moment, would you?
I watched him, down on one knee, talking to the child, and her nodding and smiling as he spoke. It was a very touching picture. but it never occurred to me that Catherine Jarvis was George's battalion of the SAS. At least, it never occurred to me until a couple of weeks later. And by then, it was too late.
South London Echo. Livestock runs wild in primary school. Headmistress bitten by mouse. Classrooms a seething mess of furry things with tails.
South Suburb Radio, local news. In an unprecedented population explosion, hordes of white mice, guinea pigs, gerbils, rabbits and hamsters ran amok today in Buckley Park Primary School. How they escaped is still a mystery.
And even then the penny didn't drop. Not until I walked into the Fox and Apricot that evening and saw old George with the paper spread out in front of him.
I'll teach her not to get sulky with me.
What do you mean? You didn't have anything to do with that, did you?
Ask no questions, be told no lies, wink, wink.
But how? I mean, it's impossible. You couldn't have done it.
It's just a small matter of calculating the various gestation periods, working out the timetable.
Well, yes,
then
but...
a contact on the inside, a shift the beasties around a bit at the right time,
oh, no.
And to tamper with the locks, and bingo.
Bingo, indeed it was.
Did you know, Barry, that hamsters and mice can have a new set of babies every fortnight? And rabbits and guinea pigs can easily have 5 or 6 young in a litter.
I must confess that these fascinating bits of knowledge had passed me by, but I might have known that George would have been clued up. Unfortunately, the same thought also occurred to others.
Well, you've been and gone and done it now, all right, George, me old mate.
I don't know what you mean.
Don't come, you old soldier, with me. Mice and gerbils and things, that's what I'm on about.
Well, I haven't got any, sorry, Ernie. Try the school down the road. They seem to have a few to spare.
George, they know. You're in trouble, mate.
So you won't make me talk, Ernie. You bring out the red-hot irons, plug me into the mains, pull me toenails out with your pliers, get out the thumb screws. You won't force a confession out of me.
How about a pint, then?
Oh, lovely talk.
What will they do to him, Ernie?
They won't do anything to me. They can't.
She's not daft, George. Bloody-minded, maybe, but daft she isn't. The inspector had her on again this morning, saying that if he wouldn't remove you, she would have to go higher. I did warn you, George.
Yeah, I know, Ernie. But I couldn't let her get away with it. I want those road safety lessons. The kids need them.
Well, that's as may be. But you can take it from me that this isn't the way to go about changing her mind.
Well, what'll happen now, Ernie?
Well, can't rightly say. Ball's in her court, if you ask me. Have to wait and see what she'll do next.
Well, I'm not waiting for no one. Those kids are going to have their road safety lessons, whatever that old bat thinks. I'm determined on that.
George, old son, I hate to have to say it, but you are on the verge of going overboard about this bloody road safety law.
That's right. Revile me, slander me. I don't care. I tell you this, Ernie, I'm not going to give up.
And neither did he. In fact, he followed his own advice to me and applied imagination to the problem.
Right then. Line up along that white line. That's it. Imagine it's the edge of the road. Amanda, don't push by. Now then, always make it clear that you're going to cross. When there's a gap, signal your intention. No, Margaret, not just 2 fingers. Use the whole hand.
Ingenious. But it couldn't last, of course.
Hey, you, Mr. George, I want a word with you.
Hello? sorry.
Hello. What do you want?
I thought I told you I would not allow you to give my children road safety lessons.
As I recall, Mrs., you refused to allow me into the playground. Well, I'm not in the playground.
No, but the children are, and you are interfering with them.
But no court would convict me, love.
You know what I mean. The whole area can hear you.
It's a handy little gadget, isn't it? I borrowed it off the SDP.
If you don't stop this at once, I shall telephone for the police.
All right. If Ernie's on duty, you might just tell him that I'll see him in the pub about 7 tonight, would you? Thanks very much.
Are you going to stop using that thing?
Look, why not let me into the playground? Wouldn't need it then, now would I?
Never.
Well, I don't have much choice then, do I? This is important work I'm doing. Them kids need educating.
I am responsible for educating those children.
Well, don't worry, love, it don't show.
That settles it. Give me that thing.
What?
Oh,
I could see that a fine old row was building up, and the children could see it too. A moment ago, they were running happily around the playground. Now, they were lined up against the railings, watching the struggle.
Man of mine, what you're doing, missus? Let go of me doodah!
I will not be
defined! You'll break it!
Give it to me!
It's not yours! You can't stop me!
I was just thinking that perhaps I ought to rush in and separate them, though I wasn't quite sure who to rescue from whom when it happened. Kids, hordes of them, came pouring out of the playground, singing one of George's songs like a war chant, and ploughed through the battling pair like a human snowplough. Quite impressive, really. Neither George nor Miss Wilkins stood a chance. George was sent flying into a hedge, while the headmistress found herself thrust back against a lamppost and roughly lashed there with a wide variety of coloured school scarves. I always did think there was too many westerns on TV. The children danced round the lamppost, singing wildly, and then they gathered George, who was completely bemused by the whole affair, up in their midst and disappeared along Station Path, the most spectacular charge of the 7th Cavalry I had ever seen. I should have untied her, I suppose, but somehow it seemed rather disloyal to George and the children, so I slipped quietly away. Ernie let her go about 10 minutes later. A vindication for George's relationship with the kids, I suppose, but it also settled his hash.
Not my fault. She attacked me.
You was causing something of a public nuisance, George. We'd already had a couple of calls at the station. I was on my way down to sort it out when I saw you go by.
What happened?
Don't remember.
Don't want to remember. They dumped him in the cafe by the station, Barry. One little 10-year-old even left 20 pence for a cup of tea and a bun. Would you credit it?
I thought it was smashing.
There's going to be trouble, though. Mark my words.
I'm not afraid of her. There's nothing she can do to me.
Fighting words. But Miss Wilkins was now a very angry lady, and she had obviously done some hard thinking, because the next week she produced her secret weapon.
A pelican crossing?
Well, a lot of nonsense.
That's right. Formal application went in at the weekend. She maintains that the road is sufficiently busy to warrant one.
Yeah, well, I know it's busy, but what can a pelican crossing do that George can't?
Well, for a start, Barry, they bleep. They don't talk or sing.
Oh.
Yeah, not a chance. They won't want to spend the money.
But they did want. The Highways Committee met, men came and made chalk marks all over the pavement, and the decision was announced in the local papers. Miss Wilkins was fighting back.
Even if they do have a pelican crossing, they'll still want a lolliplop man. They're not safe, those things, not on their own.
Don't you worry, George. We'll get up a petition about it. And we did. Mums, kids and all. We even got a couple of paw prints from docile pets. But it didn't do any good. For once, the council moved fast. The chairman of the Highways Committee turned out to have a brother-in-law in the local education office, but that was probably just coincidence. And before we knew what had happened, the workmen had moved in, and George had been given a week's notice. Buckley Park's little bighorn was almost over.
They can't do this to me.
They are gonna do it, George. You've got to face it, mate.
Well, I'll still be able to go down there, won't I? Still talk to the kids.
You'd better be careful, George. It might be misunderstood.
What do you mean? What do you mean, misunderstood?
And it was then that I realised how narrow was the dividing line between the acceptable and the unacceptable. With his lollipop stick in his hand and his white coat, George could chat with the kids and arouse no comment. Without them, people might well misunderstand what he was trying to do. I don't think he fully realised this, but he felt his impending loss of status keenly.
I've been a lollipop man on that bit of road for nearly 2 years.
Oh, well, that's progress, George. Microchips put in a lot of people on the heap these days.
No, microchip. It was that woman. She did it. I love this job, Ernie. I need it. It keeps me going.
I know, George, I know.
Too old to move on again. I'm running out of peak caps.
I crept out and left them to it. Looking back now, I feel ashamed of myself, but I couldn't bear to see George go to pieces. I depended on him. He always had the answers. And if the roles were reversed, I had nothing to offer him. I did at least have enough guts not to burden him with my latest problem. Well, at least not then.
Accounts ready, Mr. Furman?
Not quite, Mr. Sanders.
I see. Barry, I'm afraid I must ask you to step into my office.
The loss of the job itself didn't especially worry me. George had sort of conditioned me to the idea it would happen sooner or later, and I was really quite keen to offer my hidden talents to someone more appreciative of them. Problem was, who? And with George otherwise engaged, I hadn't anyone to chat it over with. So I worried alone, forgetting his last week was slipping away. And then suddenly, it was Friday.
Morning, son. You going to let me take you over the road for the last time?
Oh, no. It's not your last day, George, is it?
End of the road for me, son. Beep, beep, flash, flash be here on Monday morning, and much good may it do them. I can't see those blighters in the buses stopping for that, can you?
What are you going to do, George?
Give up, son. I know when I'm beat. I'm too old to start anything new.
Perhaps it wasn't too late even then. Perhaps if I put my arm round his shoulders, told him what a pal he'd been, arranged to meet him for a drink that night, perhaps then things might have been different. But I don't really think so. George was George, which made some things inevitable.
You're looking a bit down yourself this morning, son. Anything up?
Yes. Well, actually, George, there's something I want to talk to you about.
Ah, lost your job, have you?
How did you know?
Just saw it coming a mile off. It's the best thing for you, son. Now you can try something completely different. Commuting's a crime against humanity.
Yes, that's all very well, George, but I need the money.
Where's putting the cart before the horse, son? Take your time. Look about a bit. Use your imagination. See what fate pops in your path.
Not quite the advice you get at the job centre, I suppose, but sound enough, if you were used to George.
Look, if you want to hang around a bit, we'll have a longer chat, but this is my last day, see, and I'm going to see my kids over this road to the end.
Oh, yes, of course. Sorry.
Okay, you lot. Come on, over you come.
And so, for the last time, the traffic obeyed that imperious wave of the lollipop stick. Across the road they flowed, a chattering babble of kids, mothers, pets, pushchairs, all safe behind George's pole.
Hello, George. Look what I've got.
Oh, yeah, he's a fine little fella, isn't he? What's his name?
Floppy.
You won't be able to take him with you everywhere, you know, Susie, love.
No, I know, but I had to show George, didn't I?
Hold him tight, Susie. I think perhaps he should go back in his basket.
Who's a beautiful bunny, then?
I was going to call him after you, George, but I was reading a book, see, and they call their rabbit Floppy because of his ears.
I don't think I'll ever forget that picture. The child holding her pet, the mother looking fondly on, and George scratching the rabbit's ears and talking to the child as though they were equals, as indeed they were.
So you'll have to keep an eye on his paws in case they get sore. Your ma will get you some ointment for them if they do. You have to look after him if he's yours, now, don't you?
Oh, yes.
And then it happened.
Oh.
Careful with him, love.
Floppy, go
see him. Oh, John.
Come here.
It all happened so fast. The rabbit wriggling free. The child screams. The mother instinctively grabbing her to stop her running out into the road after her pet. The rest of us standing frozen in our tracks. But George didn't hesitate. He dropped his lollipop stick and rushed straight out into the road and gave the animal such a kick up its bunny bum that he lifted it clean across to the other pavement. It was magnificent. It was stupendous. If he'd been at Cardiff Arms Park, he'd have converted a try from the halfway line. But there was nobody to kick George. The rabbit was fine. Bit bruised, of course, and I gather he lolloped a bit lopsidedly for a few days. But as always, George was different, and George was misunderstood.
Straight out
in front of the traffic.
See, old driver didn't stand a chance.
Fancy doing a thing like that. It was only a rabbit after all.
Well, I suppose, looked at with the cold eye of logic, it was a bit daft. Not the norm, you might say. But that was George. He loved animals and he loved his kids. Anyway, he dodged his final sacking.
I never wronged an onion, I hope I never shall. I never wronged an onion, I treat it as a pal. Tell me, tell me, tell me why. I never wronged an onion, why should it make me cry?
He was a good sort, old George. Funny ideas and all.
Yeah, I'm going to miss him.
The traffic won't. They can reopen the Kingston bypass.
No more eccentric haircuts.
No more loud halo road safety lessons.
No more bows and arrows.
Buses can start running on time again.
I suppose Miss Wilkins won in the end, didn't she, Ernie?
Nobody's won, Barry. We've all lost.
Noble sentiments were not quite true, I'm afraid. We all went to George's funeral. Well, it was a cremation, actually, somewhere near Putney. I was quite impressed with the proceedings. Oh, not the service. It was the cars that got me. Big and black and shiny. And all those guys in smart suits and top hats. They were a man short, so I helped carry the coffin. And as we sloshed our way up the path in the rain, I remembered George's advice. When it was all over, I had a word with the bloke in charge, and after a brief interview, he took me on, sort of trainee, learn the business, so to speak. I think George would have enjoyed the irony.
Imagination, son, will solve most problems if you look at them the right way. Never say die, son. Never say die.
So, I think I'm going to be okay now. So does Jenny, George's niece. Turned up out of the blue at the chapel. Well, she was naturally rather upset, so I offered a bit of comfort. She accepted it. Went on from there. Easy when you're not trying. We've become, quite close now.
That undertaker's all right for the moment, Barry. But you do have 2 A-levels, you know. You mustn't waste them. Perhaps you could get into a bank or an accounts office somewhere.
Just occasionally, I wonder if George was right about women. I'll never forget him, that's for sure. Sometimes in the morning, when I'm taking the hearse down to fill her up, I stop at the Pelican Crossing to let the kids over. And it brings back the old days, happy days.
She's all I've got, and I like her a lot. Please listen to my sorry tale.
I'll always prefer that to the Lass of Richmond Hill.
Just think of the dangers that lurk. She may enjoy it in prison, but I'd have to go out to work. La, 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 la,
Patrick Troughton played George and Mark Straker Barry in I'd Give My Right Arm to Be Ambidextrous by Michael Bartlett. The headmistress was played by Anne Jameson, Ernie Ronald Herdman, Sanders, John Webb, the Commissioner, Bernard Brown, the barmaid, Tessa Worsley, all Barry's girlfriends, Helena Breck, and the little girl, Verity Ann Meldrum. The songs were sung by the Finchley Children's Music Group, conducted by Ron Corp. The play was directed by Glyn Dearman.